from KQED.
Good morning. This is the California Report. I'm Penny Nelson. Students from across California joined the National Day of Protest to mark the one-month anniversary of the Marjory Stoneman Douglas High School mass shooting in Florida. We start in Los Angeles with Bureau Chief Stephen Cuevas.
Hundreds of high school students from the Miguel Contreras Learning Complex near downtown L.A. joined a nationwide demonstration in support of tighter gun control. Contreras is just blocks from Castro Middle School, where a 12-year-old girl brought a handgun to campus last month. The gun accidentally discharged, injuring two teenagers.
The thing is, like, we do experience shootings in the streets, but we never see them in our own schools, you know, so.
17-year-old Alexis Chavez helped organize yesterday's rally.
We just had enough, and we're calling on policymakers to listen to our demands and make a change, you know, for us, because if we don't do it, then who will? We're the students.
With just under 3,000 students, Contreras is just a bit smaller than Marjory Stoneman Douglas High in Florida, where 17 students and staff were gunned down by a former student 1 month ago. The massacre sparked an impassioned and at times divisive national discussion that includes a push from many pro-gun rights advocates to allow teachers to arm themselves when on campuses.
It's a horrible idea.
Sophomore Carlos Donis would rather see a national assault weapons ban and universal background checks.
If our fear is that guns are near children, think about that. Think about how sometimes we can't control what a teacher thinks either. They could get frustrated and they might end up shooting a child. And there's no guarantee that they're going to be able to stop the shooter with a gun. And that's the whole point of this. We're trying to get weapons out of here.
A smaller group of Contreras High students broke off from the main rally to march along the busy streets near campus. A school spokeswoman says the students returned to class shortly after their walkout. LA Unified says similar demonstrations across the district also remained peaceful and orderly. For the California Report, I'm Stephen Cuevas in Los Angeles.
And I'm Alex Hall in Delano. Schools throughout the Central Valley also held rallies drawing attention to gun violence. At Delano High School, around 200 or more students stood around a podium in a school courtyard. Some held orange balloons and listened to their classmates, like 17-year-old Adrian Torres.
Churches, concerts, clubs are all supposed to be safe places. Yet it seems we cannot step out of our homes without the slight fear that we or our families will be affected by gun violence.
Delano has a long history of social activism. It's where labor leader Cesar Chavez led the Delano grape strike and boycott that earned farm workers better pay in the late 60s. Both of Torres's parents work in the fields. Torres and other students, including 18-year-old Mariana Valdez, say seeing what Parkland students are doing around gun violence motivated them to hold their own demonstration.
I'm, like, inspired because they're so young, you know, and they're trying to make a difference, and I think that's awesome. So I respect them.
Valdez says what impacted her the most were videos students in Parkland posted to Snapchat after the shooting in February.
And to see, like, these kids crying, you hear that, you hear those sobs, and it affects you because, like, you know what fright is, you know what fear sounds like, and that's fear.
After the rally, the Delano students set up a table at lunch to pre-register students to vote. For the California Report, I'm Alex Hall in Delano.
Meanwhile, on the northern coast of California in Humboldt County, as many as 300 Arcata High School students left their classes to participate in their own 17 minutes of silence for victims of the Florida shooting. Arcata High School sophomore Noah Robinson says that although people do a lot of hunting in rural northern California, having an AR-15 does not make sense to him.
Nobody needs to be able to loose 30 rounds in, like, 30 seconds. That's not a necessity for hunting. That's not a necessity for sport shooting. The only reason those guns were made is to kill.
Robinson also says he does not care that he missed class because he says he and his classmates are working for change. Now, changing gears, the CEO of the Bay Area-based health tech company Theranos will give up millions of shares in her company to settle what the Securities and Exchange Commission calls massive fraud. The SEC filed charges yesterday against the blood testing company's top executive, Elizabeth Holmes, her company, and the company's former president. KQED's John Brooks explains.
In 2014, Forbes valued Theranos at $9 billion, based on the claim it could perform hundreds of tests from a few drops of blood. that would have revolutionized the blood testing industry. Except it wasn't true. Investigations by the Wall Street Journal and the federal government showed that Theranos could do just a fraction of the tests it said it could. Yesterday, the SEC said the company defrauded investors out of over $700 million. Among the alleged misdeeds, hiding the fact it mostly used other companies' equipment and claiming yearly revenue about 1,000 times greater than it actually made. In addition to giving up shares, Holmes has agreed to pay a $500,000 penalty. Theranos and Holmes neither admit nor deny the allegations. A criminal probe still remains. For the California Report, I'm John Brooks.
Today is the last day for Californians to weigh in on a wish list of federal development investment zones aimed at reducing poverty. KQED's Peter John Shuler reports a good government group is asking for more time.
The so-called Opportunity Zones are a product of the Republican tax bill and would give a tax break to people making investments in designated low-income census tracts. California Forward sent a letter to Governor Brown asking him to request a 30-day extension. The group's president, Jim Mayer, says the 800 proposed sites included some areas that either aren't truly impoverished or are already attracting investment capital.
And there's no reason to give a tax subsidy for development that's going to happen in those areas.
Mayer also thinks the state should work with local agencies to see where they're trying to attract investment. A spokesman with the governor's Office of Finance says they're reviewing the letters and dozens of other public comments that have come in. For the California Report, I'm Peter John Shuler.
Well, there may be a new option for the spent fuel from San Onofre's nuclear generating station. The Nuclear Regulatory Commission has agreed to consider licensing an interim storage site for the nuclear waste in New Mexico. Allison St. John of KPBS in San Diego has more.
The federal government's failed to agree on a permanent storage site for nuclear waste, and now the private sector is taking matters into its own hands. The Nuclear Regulatory Commission has agreed to review a license application to build an interim storage facility for nuclear waste in New Mexico. John Heaton is chair of Eddy Lee Energy, which owns the land. He says Congress has so far refused to release funds originally intended for the now-stalled permanent storage site at Yucca Mountain.
We think that the reality is if Congress sees that a facility is in fact licensed and ready to operate, it may change their mind.
The Nuclear Regulatory Commission may take several years to approve the license in New Mexico, and transportation has yet to be worked out. But the possibility of an interim storage site is the first sign that highly radioactive spent fuel now being stored 100 feet from the ocean at San Onofre may eventually have somewhere else to go. For the California Report, I'm Allison St. John in San Diego.
Meanwhile, the Winter Paralympics, taking place now in Pyeongchang, are enjoying their biggest games yet. Southern California's own Mike Shea won silver in snowboarding at Sochi in 2014 and is looking to medal again. KPCC's Josie Wong reports from Seoul.
Castaic resident Mike Shea lost his lower left leg in a motorboat accident more than 15 years ago. He remembers waking up in the hospital. He was 19.
I already looked down at the bed sheets at that point and seen that they had amputated my leg. And I really didn't know at that time what kind of opportunities there were for any disabled persons or amputees. I'd never met anybody.
He says he battled alcohol and painkiller addiction for several years. But once he got sober, he committed himself to snowboarding and has won 3 world championship medals. After the Paralympics added snowboarding to the 2014 roster, he's watched the sport explode internationally.
And it went from 15, 20 competitors to 50 to 60, and now, you know, almost 90 competitors. And the level of riding, it's so close to what you would see on an able-bodied circuit, at least at the top level.
Shea did not medal in the snowboard cross competition on Monday, but says he's eager to try again in the upcoming banked slalom event. For the California Report, I'm Josie Huang in Seoul.
Support for the California Report comes from the James Irvine Foundation. Accepting nominations now for the 2019 James Irvine Foundation Leadership Awards at irvine.org. The California Healthcare Foundation, helping low-income Californians get the health care they need. On the web at chcf.org. And Eric and Wendy Schmidt, whose Fund for Strategic Innovation supports transformative ideas that benefit humanity while protecting the natural world, recognizing through science the interdependence of all living systems.
This month, the Trump administration opened up more than 1 million acres of California desert lands to new mining claims. The lands had formerly been set aside for conservation. As KPCC's Emily Guerin reports, the decision to allow more mining comes as the economy of the rural West is becoming more dependent on tourism and less on extracting natural resources.
Longtime volunteer Dave Newman remembers when hardly anyone came to this high desert national park named after a strange-looking yucca plant. But getting into Joshua Tree National Park is trickier now.
We can have 50 or 60 cars waiting to get in the west entrance. It can take an hour.
Like many national parks, in 2017, Joshua Tree had its busiest year ever. 2.8 million visitors. That's more than double what it was 5 years ago. That means there's a lot more work for people like Brianne Duzast. She works at the 29 Palms Inn, just outside the entrance to the park.
Tourism used to be very seasonal, but we are busy now all year round. You go from busy to busier. There's no real downtime anymore.
Which is why she's shocked the Trump administration is allowing new mining claims for things like gold and copper on land right next to the national park. It's land that the Obama administration had identified as some of the most visually stunning in the entire Bureau of Land Management system.
It's crazy the timing, and you know that we in these little rural communities have built up these powerful economies, and you know things are booming. We're thriving right now.
It doesn't make sense economically, so I could guess is it might be it's just a political move.
Ray Rasker runs Headwaters Economics, a nonpartisan research group in Montana, and he says natural resource industries in the West just aren't the economic powerhouses that they used to be. The number of mining jobs in Riverside and San Bernardino counties shrank by 14% between 1998 and 2015, according to the U.S. Department of Commerce. Meanwhile, during the same period, the number of tourism jobs grew by 70%.
Finding a community or a county in the West that is heavily reliant on natural resource development is a rare thing. So why would you devise policy based on the exception to the rule and ignore where most of the economy is headed?
The Bureau of Land Management is the agency that made the decision to allow new mining outside the park. And it says it's just following the president's executive orders on energy independence. Russell Schofield works on desert energy issues for the BLM.
Every administration has its priorities, and this administration has stated that mining is one of its priorities.
The BLM says less than 2% of the land could be of interest to miners. So they aren't expecting many new claims. Which gets back to Rasker's point that perhaps the decision to allow mining on these conservation lands is a political move to, quote, make mining great again. You can see trucks with bumper stickers that say that, driving by coffee shops and yoga studios that increasingly cater to tourists. For the California Report, I'm Emily Guerin in Joshua Tree.
Well, there's a void in the world of physics this week after the passing of Stephen Hawking. Caltech colleagues are mourning the famed theoretical physicist. Hawking was a frequent visitor to Caltech in Pasadena. His fame came in part from a paper written at Caltech as a fellow in the mid-70s, which altered physicists' understanding of black holes. He was beloved around the world and author of several best-selling books, including A Brief History of Time. Caltech theoretical physicist Sean Carroll says he will remember Hawking for his brilliance, stubbornness, and spirit.
He absolutely lived life to the fullest, and it showed not only in his scientific accomplishments, but just in the joie de vivre he had, the way that he went through life. I think that was inspirational to all sorts of people, whether they're physicists or not.
Hawking was 76 years old. He's survived by 3 children and 3 grandchildren. And that's the California Report for Thursday, March 15th, a production of KQED Public Radio. I'm Penny Nelson.